So yeah, this is not as intense as the others. I'm just kind of going to show you some cool data and some cool things we found. So I computed spectral properties of the sparse SYK and how they change as we make the model more and more sparse. And then you might have heard of an experiment recently that is itself a sparse SYK. So I'm going to apply our stuff to that. If at any point something doesn't make sense, feel free to yell at me. So I don't think I have to go into too much detail. I think we all know the SYK. The key thing is that it is all to all. Normally you take it as averaged over many samples. And each sample has Gaussian random coupling. So for each sample, you just choose random couplings. And then it has features of quantum chaos, and it can be analyzed with random matrix theory. Its holographic dual is JT gravity. I think the most important thing here is that it's a very simple toy model, so it's feasible for simulation on actual real quantum devices. So recently, a Swingle subgroup proposed a modification of the SYK where you just delete terms randomly. So there's this new, I'm going to throw another P at you. There's this new parameter P. So each term is subject to this new probability of whether or not it's deleted. So P is actually the probability that it's kept. So P equals 1 means every term is kept. P equals 0 means they're all deleted. Low P is more sparse. And Brian defined a similar quantity, K, which is the effective average degree of the interaction graph, hypergraph. And P is related to K by this relation N over N choose 4. Remember that, because it'll come up later. This gives huge computational speedups. So this is real data I have. For N equals 18, it takes 2 hours to compute the full SYK, but for sparse SYK, without losing any important properties, it only takes 13 minutes. Over on here, 86 hours to 11 hours. I don't want to take like several days to compute what I want. I want to take half a day. So this is very good. So we're going to analyze the sparse SYK model, analyze this quantum chaos using a few common quantities properties. First one is the nearest neighbor gap ratio. This is a mess. It's just you take the gaps in the spectrum, you take ratios of subsequent gaps, and you average over the entire spectrum. The minimum is just so that you know it's between 0 and 1. So the SYK, depending on the system size, has a specific RMT ensemble. So if n mod 8 is 2, it's GUE, 4, it's GSE, so on. And it repeats. So each ensemble has its own value of this gap ratio. So if you have a GUE SYK, if you compute its gap ratio, it should be around 0.6. But the thing is, if you just compute the data, compute the SYK directly, for GSE and GOE, you actually don't get these because of blocks in the Hamiltonian. It's just parity sector stuff. If you don't want to deal with that, you can use these values. Which I don't want to mess with the data, so I just use these values. So 0.6, 0.41, and 0.42. The remarkable thing about gap ratio, it's robust for only one sample. So you don't have to average, but I do anyway. So the other thing that we've heard about a lot today, spectral form factor, here's the actual definition. It's just Fourier transform of the correlators. So this is another common diagnostic of chaos. The basic shape is, this dip downwards, a ramp, and then a plateau. But what are these fluctuations? We'll get to that in a second. There's also the ramp time. It's an important quantity. It's just the time at which the ramp starts. It has this interpretation, the energy scale within which random matrix theory is a well-fitting description. If you just compute spectral form factor directly, you get these wiggles. Douglas gave us a nice trick. So if you just apply a Gaussian window to the spectrum and then tune the width of the Gaussian with a new parameter alpha, you can get rid of the wiggles. So that's what we want to do. And we want to do that because we want to detect changes in the spectral form factor as we get more and more sparse. So we want to be as sensitive to these changes as possible, so we filter out the noise. Okay, so here's the data. Spectral form factor for P equals 1 is this ramp, but as you get more and more sparse, the ramp deviates. And then as you get really sparse, it just peels up into a plateau. So there are two transition points we can identify here. First one is when the spectral form factor first changes, and then the second one is when there is no ramp, there's only a plateau. So I'm going to measure the deviation of the spectral form factor from the full SYK by just taking the minimum value divided by the full SYK minimum value. So it's just like a relative error, how much it deviates. Okay, and it's extremely resilient to sparsity, actually, which is pretty striking. You can delete 90% of terms, and the spectral form factor doesn't change at all. So there's a question here, what is really necessary for emergent gravity, because all-to-all interaction is not necessary. And this is also, as I mentioned before, is significant for computational feasibility. You don't have to simulate all the terms. You can simplify the model a lot and still capture all the important quantum chaotic holographic properties. So once it hits that point, it deviates quickly upwards. So we call this transition point P1, and we want to check how P1 scales with the system size. So here's that same graph for multiple n's. Each system size is a different color. And we use a 20% threshold. When it deviates by 20%, we call that P1. And then we plot it here. And I just plug it into MATLAB, tell me what the fit is. The fit is that same relation between P and K. So it seems that there is a certain effective average degree of the hypergraph at which chaos first changes. And if I haven't made any mistakes, it's around 8 or 9. And in the original sparse SYK paper, they conjectured it was somewhere between, or it was somewhere around 4, I think. So there you go. And this is, yeah, if you want to run an SYK experiment and you want it to be faithful, you can plug your n into this equation and see how much you can simplify while still maintaining quantum chaos. Just put a k here and that's it. P equals k times n over n choose 4. Yeah. Okay. So that other transition, when the spectral form factor deviates so much that there's no ramp at all, it's just a plateau. If you just look at the spectral form factor itself, it kind of dies in a weird way. So you can't really, you know, algorithmically detect reliably. So we use the gap ratio that I mentioned earlier. So up here are the GUE values. It's around 0.6, 0.42, 0.41. And so as you get more and more sparse, the gap ratio suddenly starts to deviate. And this transition is even sharper, but it, you know, it's the same phenomenon of probing the spectrum, the one that we would like to sit on. And it has the same fit. So if we... there we go. Same fit, but so it's a different average degree at which there's no chaos at all. Around 2. Okay. So, you know, if I'm a Majorana, on average, how many Majoranas do I interact with? The hypergraph. Okay. So we also track how the ramp time, so in between P1 and P2, the ramp deviates. And so we track how the ramp time changes. It goes like 1 over P squared. We think we can explain that, but we don't want to make that claim yet until we're absolutely sure. But there you go, we did that. I found something interesting in the data though, once you hit P2. So at P equals 1, every sample is twofold degenerate, and every sample has very close to the universal value of the gap ratio. But as you get sparser, the samples start to have different degeneracies. So P equals 0.005 is actually some fourfold degenerate samples, about 8-fold, 16-fold, with different values of the gap ratio than expected. And they vary a lot sample to sample. And if you look at just the twofolds, the gap ratio still decreases itself. And it gets pretty wild. I don't really know how to explain this, so I thought I'd just present it to you. Yeah. So I don't know what's going on here. It might be interesting. Okay. Here's a way of graphically seeing it. Around P2, the samples start to be different degeneracies. And it's extremely sharp transition. And this is just the gap ratio within each degeneracy. It still decreases. Okay. So let's look at the experiment now. Traversable wormhole dynamics on a quantum processor based on quantum gravity in the lab, part 1 and 2. And there was another experiment by, I think, another Swingle subgroup, but it's not as straightforward to analyze with my stuff, so we'll just look at this one. The details aren't very important, but they took an SYK model and they sparsified it to a large degree using machine learning. So they started with an n equals 10 system, and at the end they get a Hamiltonian with 7 Majoranas and only 5 interactions. It was based on mutual information signatures. And then in their supplemental information, they have another model that is not all commuting. The first one is commuting. This one has 8 Majoranas and 6 terms. This one's weird. The machine learning model is to optimize for new physics. I can't really analyze it. It has a weird spectrum. There you go. Okay. So we apply. First, you know, just looking at it, it's low n, and it's only one sample. And I don't think we really know yet how to understand chaos and holography of one sample when it's not typical of the ensemble. There was this paper, Wormholes Without Averaging, but that looked at members of the ensemble that are typical and representative of the entire ensemble. So it's extremely sparse. So if we take our equation, P1 for this system should be around 0.3, P2 should be around 0.1. So it first starts to change around 0.3, and then there's no chaos around 0.1. 5 out of 210 terms is 0.02. So, but you know, it's only one sample, so P is kind of an ensemble thing if you have a large number of samples, then that's kind of the proportion of the ensemble. So I guess the question is whether 5 terms is simply not enough for holography, emergent gravity. So the most direct thing we can do, the gap ratio is robust to only one sample. So this is one sample, so we can compute it. The eigenvalue should be twofold degenerate, and the R value should be around 0.6. It's fourfold degenerate, and it's around 0.51. So that's extremely far from the expected value. It's not even the right degeneracy. The other model is twofold, 0.56, still extremely far. If we compute the sparse SYK, an ensemble with P equals 5 out of 210, so 0.02, even the twofold degenerate samples are very far from the full SYK. So it appears to be a very atypical member of the ensemble. Whether or not that is okay, I think is still unclear. Here's a spectral form factor. This is what it should look like, this big ramp. This is what the sparse SYK at 5 out of 210 looks like. There is no ramp at all. And I tried to introduce averaging in the neighborhood of the coefficients of this sample. I can't get a ramp out of it no matter what I try. There's this tiny one, but it's not really a ramp. Here's S16, their other model. I think there's still some open questions before we can understand these things. And I think the degeneracy stuff is still unclear. So what is really necessary for emergent gravity if all interactions are not? How do we understand holography if you just have one sample? Like if you simulate just one sample, especially if it's not a typical sample. What even is averaging is still not clear. And I think it's interesting to ask, when you only have not a full ramp, but it's deviated a little bit, it's a partial ramp, what's the holography there? Is it the same as it's clearly not the same as the full SYK, but is it holographic in a different way? And I think the machine learning model from this experiment might live in this regime if it's an atypical sample. And what's that degeneracy emergent stuff about? Why does the gap ratio fluctuate? So future research is to think about these questions. And if you want to do a real experiment, you can use these transition points to guide how much you can simplify your model to still remain faithful. I'm going to larger n. This is interesting because at the numerics I want to do, the full SYK, I can't even do it. I just don't have enough computing power, but I can make it sparse, and I can actually do it. So it's a real-world example of how our methods have enabled experiments, although I just do classical simulations. So don't steal my idea, please. We're going to attempt to modify the machine learning model to account for quantum chaos and random matrix theory features. So I think it's important to take those into account when you're choosing a sample of the SYK to simulate holography. And maybe I can also introduce noise in some way and actually average. Okay, thank you.
All right, questions?
I have a question for the audience. Did I go too fast?
Hi, thanks for the talk. I have a comment. So the huge amount of degeneracies and the fluctuation in the gap ratios you observed was already explained in 2020 paper by myself and collaborators. So one way to think about it is when you have extreme sparsity, it's like you just have one term, one product of fermions, then you can just have plus one, minus one eigenvalues. So of course, that's extremely degenerate. you can add more terms to reduce the sparsity, but you're not going to quickly kill all the degeneracies. So you have lots of emergent symmetries. So that also explains why you have varying gap ratios in extreme sparsity. So that's my comment.
Okay, great, thank you. This field moves fast. I will look into that. Thank you.
Hi, thanks. Did you consider how your P1 and P2 change if you go away from Q equals 4, like Q equals 6 or Q equals 8?
I didn't attempt that. I can if you want to.
Yeah, I mean, I think it should be even more sparse and still work.
Okay, interesting.
Other questions?
Take the Zoom one.
Oh, Alexei. Oh, I see. Alexei, can you unmute yourself and ask the question?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Yes, a little bit unclear, but yeah.
Yeah, I have a couple of questions. So you expect deep RAM plateau in a general chaotic system. One way you can see the presence of Schwarzian at finite n is the behavior of the two-point function at late times. That for any q, it should decay as 1 over t cube. So have you tried looking into that and see how this changes as you change the sparsity?
I'm sorry, I didn't understand that at all. I think you can maybe email me later. Sorry about that.
He asked you to compare a two-point function. So you calculate a two-point function.
Oh, directly?
Yeah, in your model, and then see whether it follows the prediction that you expect from the Schwarzian, which is that it goes like 1 over t cubed for very large times.
Right. I have not done that. I think it would be easy to. So I can do that before we publish, yeah.
I have a kind of maybe unrelated question, but so have you thought about so in string theory and so on, we're interested many times in matrix models, models where the interaction involves a matrix, without disorder, but with a matrix. So there it's not, again, not all to all, it's slightly more restricted. And I was wondering whether one can what results you would get if you get, for example, a matrix interaction, like a single trace, for example. And
I wonder that too.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
But thank you, that's very interesting.
I have another question, if I still have time.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah.
This particular pattern of sparsity, it introduces a particular pattern of connectivity in your graph, and there are many other known types of graphs connecting endpoints, for example, small world graphs and so on. And I'm wondering if some of them might be more beneficial for simulating such model on a quantum computer.
Yes. So this does not, definitely give any hypergraph structure. It's just non-biased. Every term is subject to probabilistic deletion. Maybe that's something that's more suited for machine learning models than us, because I don't really know how to do that. I think certain connectivity properties in the hypergraph are important potentially as well for faithful simulation.
All right, let's take Patrick again.